following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sarah Zorn, the food editor at Northside Media, which produces the annual Taste Talks Festival in both Brooklyn and Chicago each fall. Picking up where the festival left off, the Taste Talks podcast brings innovators from various fields, including music, art, media, design, and tech, together with luminaries from the food and restaurant world to expound on any and all topics related to taste. So I am already loving today's show because I have been joined in the studio by a coterie of fabulous females, including Cindy Ramirez, founder of Taste the Style, an online destination for the fashion and food obsessed, and Emily Elise Miller, founder of Trends on Trends, which specializes in culinary trend forecasting for the aesthetically inclined. But before we dive into what's hot and what is not in the food, fashion, design, travel, digital, and beauty worlds, I am happy to welcome back food writer extraordinaire Jacqueline Raposo to talk about this week's breaking gastronomic news.
Hello,
hey there.
Sarah.
Hi, Jacqueline. I just want to point out, I know we're on radio, but I have dressed to the nines since we're both food writers. I'm sure you spend most of your days in the corner of a couch looking gross and nasty, but owing to our two amazingly fabulous and stylish guests.
I think you're looking good.
This is as good as I ever look. So radio guests, you're welcome. Anyway, on the topic of incredible women, as I'm sure you were seriously excited to learn a few months ago that French chef Anna-Sophie Pick, I'm so used to writing things, I don't commit to pronouncing them. She's the fourth of only six women to have ever been awarded 3 Michelin stars. Mm-hmm. She had her sights on New York City with 2 restaurants slated for Madison Avenue, but bummer, recently in the news, they've reneged on all those plans. Do you know anything else about what's going on?
I do not know specifically why she is not coming now. It is a huge disappointment, though, because she is a formidable force in food, and I feel like she could have brought a little bit of new life into specifically our little corner of the world. I don't know what's happening with those spaces. Do you have any idea what's going on with her absence now?
The only thing that went on is that the plans have been suspended until, quote-unquote, further notice, which, you know what, that's like industry speak for never ever.
I wonder. She's got, I think, 7 businesses now in France. And I know one of her spaces was supposed to be something like $50,000 rent a month.
Wow. I do know one of the investors, the major investors, backed out of the project. It all comes down to money, but it is a serious letdown. I guess we're just going to have to bite the bullet and buy a ticket to visit her in France.
I think we should put that on our upcoming
They have played with our emotions. Anyway, talking about current trends in the food and lifestyle world, I would love any and all of my guests to weigh in, if you know anything about it, on the sudden rise of brewery yoga. Yoga inside breweries. What do you guys think about this? And even more importantly, have you ever done the downward dog with a pint in your hand?
I want Maybe to be we should against start this now? Trend because I'm sort of a purist when it, you know, I do like the hippie om chanting yoga, but I was doing yoga to like We the Kings this morning and I was like, who am I to judge? I think the more people get into it, if you're going to do a hard workout, a good yogic workout, and know that there's a beer at the end. So if you're not, so if you don't want to do a hard yogic workout,
I think the missing link between me and yoga is
a flight of beer.
I think this is what was missing.
And I bet it's beautiful to do yoga in a brewery. You've got like, you know, huge vaulted ceilings and ample space and the smell of hops and things like that. So it probably, I don't know, it's probably a good course to a finish line. I would do it.
Emily, what do you know about it?
I completely agree. I think it's doing getting me to yoga class in general is already really tough. Yeah. So doing it in a brewery makes it really convenient because then you can just have your friends meet you there right after.
And but there's more guys too. Like they're trying to get more guys into yoga.
Exactly.
So if you want to,
that's the way to do it.
Bring guys and girls together, maybe like a little singles mingle kind of thing.
Well, do they work it into any of the poses? Are you supposed to do like you know sun salutations with them? Raise the lager.
I want to know more though.
Yoga, I know, right? And I think it's so charming. When men do yoga too, because you know they're big and burly and strong, and they're trying to like be flexible and stretch, it's probably really endearing.
And they're
to
not
do
as good as
yoga.
Women. They're, to be honest with you, at yoga, a lot of them aren't if they're not like actually doing.
Right,
it.
And so they're a little self-conscious, and it's adorable. So it might be the perfect yogic situation for some of us.
Okay, guys, come into a brewery near you. But as an addendum to all of that, did you hear that Lululemon, those fat shamers with the see-through yoga pants, are actually coming out with their very own beer line?
Yeah,
everybody's. I feel like we talk about somebody with their own beer line every week. Nice. We had the Duff beer and the Wu-Tang beer weeks ago, and now we've got Lululemon getting into the game.
Yeah, I don't know how far they're going with it. As far as what I've read, it's only like 88,000 beer, and it's in Canada right now. But they're marketing it to men too. I guess they're trying to pair it with their men's boxer yogic shorts or something like that. So I don't know. It looks. I have no idea about that. About what I think about that, but
it's really a push to get guys into downward dogs and name another yoga position. I keep wanting to say something lotus. I don't know. obviously, I'm such a yoga master. Yeah. No, like. Honestly, and nobody get offended, I have such like a Jewish New Yorker neurotic brain. It's a mile a minute. It never stops. This is why I can't do yoga.
So
I just
maybe
can't
you need
get zen enough.
Before yoga, then.
This is the answer. This is the answer for me. All right, guys, we are going to take a little break, do a few sun salutations, grab a beer. We're right inside Roberta's. It shouldn't be too hard. And we will be right back. My next two guests truly have their fingers on the pulse of what's new and what's now in the world of food, especially as it pertains to and intersects with fashion, beauty, design, travel, business, and branding. Cindy Ramirez is the founder of Taste the Style, an editorial website delivering daily fashion and food inspiration. And Emily Elise Miller is the founder of Trends on Trends, a comprehensive guide to all things trending in the world of food and travel. Hi there, ladies. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
And looking fabulous. I was not disappointed. So Taste Talks as a show is all about finding ways in which my personal obsessions, which are food and chefs and restaurants, intersect in both obvious and maybe not so obvious ways with a variety of other mediums, such as music and theater and fashion and design. So obviously, that is very much the thrust of your own personal and professional lives. So talk to me about how they interlap for you and what made you decide to explore and showcase those various connections editorially?
I guess I'll start. So Taste of Style actually started as a personal blog. I come from a background of fashion and food. I worked in the service industry for a very long time, and I also went to school for fashion marketing. So I personally loved exploring both categories and industries and really wanted to figure out a way to bring the two of them together. So actually, long story short, Taste of Style was like a food review site, like back when blogs weren't even like, were barely a thing. I want to say like 8 years ago or something.
You don't look old enough to have been blogging when they were barely a thing.
I'm 30, yeah. So I did it, you know, really like 22 years old or so. And I mostly did it like downtown restaurants, like, you know, just kind of recommending my favorite ones, kind of like under the radar places. And then fast forward many years later, I kind of like let it go for a while. And then I was like, I want to tie in food somehow. And then fashion somehow. And it just kind of like things kept kind of smacking me in the face. I'm like, yeah, like look at like all these designers doing things that relate to food now. And vice versa, look at all these like restaurants working with designers and like hosting all these fabulous dinners. And it just seemed like a really, I guess, good time to explore both and kind of, I guess, like bring the fusion into one platform. And that's kind of what we like doing most. And like all of our editorial pieces try to fuse both, like accessories. We'll get into it maybe later, just how Emily and I actually partnered on an editorial piece for Devour, we call it. Just always fusing accessories or fashion and style into like, you know, what's on the plate and what's on the table. And that's kind of what we love and do on a regular basis.
FYI, I only my entire jewelry collection, save for my wedding ring, which maybe I should is due for an upgrade, but I only wear utensils. So if you have utensils are like fruit or vegetables that have been turned into jewelry. So if you have any hints afterwards or places
definitely
I could go.
We have an article that's just like all these accessories that show your love for food. So like watermelon earrings and like clutches that are pineapples and all of that. I got you.
Mama needs some new accessories.
So I got your back.
Emily, how did these worlds collide for you?
So I grew up in hotels and restaurants. So that's kind of where the love and the learning all started. And then moved to New York to go to fashion school, did design for a while, did a lot of freelance stuff, and then started doing some editorial and trend forecasting internships. And that's kind of where I was like, oh, these trend forecasters, they live in the clouds. They travel all the time. They're the ones who are really kind of curating these ideas and noticing patterns and getting all of these things that they've learned together and solidifying it into an actual idea. So I really loved that. But obviously, becoming a trend forecasting agency, becoming any kind of consulting agency, takes many years to work up to. So I wanted to start somewhere and did what I knew best and started doing some editorial stuff, just a lot more thoughtful interviews with people who you wouldn't normally expect to hear from, not always the top chefs. And went on from there, did like some styling shoots, just like really beautiful editorial stuff showing my aesthetic. And now we're kind of a full-on consulting agency doing a lot of different creative projects and always shoots, keeping the editorial stuff strong and getting really into starting to curate those very thoughtful trend forecasts. So those obviously take a lot of time and effort, and I travel all the time to collect all this information. I'm collecting contributors from around the world too to help us all kind of stay connected and make the world a little bit smaller and get them out on Trends on Trends.
Well, you keep mentioning trend forecasting, and I'm so fascinated. Obviously, I follow food and restaurant trends, so I have a sense of how things start building, but especially in fashion and beauty, I'm interested. Is it like a Wizard of Oz situation where there's this like faceless woman or man behind a curtain that just sends out edicts every so often? You will be wearing culottes this season, or like how does the ball get rolling? Where are these who are these trend forecasters, and how are they finding their information?
That is exactly what they want you to think, but but it's really just all about traveling, noticing patterns. So when I'm kind of getting ready, I think the easiest way is to give you an example of what I would do. So if I'm doing any kind of article, the first thing I'll do is just spend like tons and tons of hours researching something if I feel like I'm noticing it. So I kind of go by rule of three, whether I'm traveling, hear something, or I'm reading something online. And as soon as I find three places that are really doing something well, I'm like, okay, I know this is happening somewhere. I don't know what's happening with it yet, but like then I'll start digging a lot deeper. So before forecasting it, there were blogs about everything, and you could pretend like you're in Macau or something by just diving really deep into the internet and like feeling like you know everything going on there. people weren't traveling as much. So they would have to actually trust trend forecasters to travel, do all this stuff, bring back all these samples. And that's where the information came from. But now that things are pretty readily available, it really just takes a lot of research and loving that ability to take a step back and notice what's going on in food, hospitality, everything. So that's kind of what I focus on. I love fashion, but definitely focusing on food, design, travel.
So talk to me about some of the content that, you know, we could regularly expect to find on both of your respective websites.
For me, I have a few series that we do on a weekly basis. A couple that I'm most happy and excited and proud of are one of them is Boss Babes, and that's highlighting women either in fashion, food. I mean, it really kind of runs the gamut. They're mostly just creative women, though, that are just doing really awesome things. And so we kind of go inside their homes or their workspace, and we interview them and, you know, take amazing pictures of them. And another series that we do is Wednesdays With, which is much more restaurant focused, I'd say, even though we do sometimes go back and forth between designers or entrepreneurs, or, but for the most part, a lot of times chefs and the restaurateurs behind the restaurants. And I guess another piece, the Staycationers is an awesome travel editorial series that was founded, actually co-founded by my friend Celine Bozart. It's basically us like running around like crazy girls going to awesome hotels and doing a beautiful piece around it. So their food and bev, their amenities, and we usually bring on like a guest staycationer to kind of help get the word out on like our travel piece. That and other, you know, we have the usual kind of the list type stuff, roundups of places to go and, you know, places to see and that sort of thing. For the most part, I'd say that's what you can expect from Taste of Style.
What about trends on trends?
Yeah. So, like I said, we started out with editorial, but as the kind of creative agency side has been picking up, it's been a lot harder to keep up with all the editorial stuff. But I still love it. Like I said, we're working really hard to get those more trend forecast written articles together. But I kind of break trends on trends up into a few different sections. So we have the editorial section, which is, you know, recipes, regular kind of editorial stuff, but with the trends on trends aesthetic, like a little bit different type of eye. And we have social media. So we're doing different social media events with people. We do content creation and photography and styling, stuff like that, and then different events. So what I'm really focusing on are these two series that I'm working on. One of them is Breakfast Club and one of them is Dine Around. So that's kind of what the next year so has been kind of dedicated to. And
yeah, well, you know, Northside, we could readily attest to the fact that it's become a real necessity in the world of media to explore platforms outside of print and web. So you've certainly, you just touched on it, but how have you both begun to grow and expand on your brands and further your voice with these event series or with certain collaborations?
Totally. Well, I guess we can talk about the InstaMeet that Emily and I did an InstaMeet in Jersey City, actually. So aside from running Taste of Style, I'm also like a partner in Den Hospitality, which is a bar group. We have one bar in the West Village. We have another bar in Jersey City, which is why we went out there. And it's
is
also
Jersey
an awesome
City trending, or is it already over?
Oh, it's not over. It's just over beginning. Oh
my God. Spotted Jersey City.
Totally. We totally trend spotted Jersey City. That's exactly what we did. So, yeah, so we kind of went out there because we realized it's still an untapped, you know, neighborhood according to Manhattan people and according to Brooklynites and all that stuff. And so we really wanted to bring attention to the rise of all these different restaurants that are popping up out there. You know, Dale Talde has his place, and I forget the name of the Momofuku chef, but you
30
know,
acres. The chef is Kevin Pemely.
Maybe.
I hate pronouncing things on air because I just take for granted that. Yeah, I know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Sorry, so, Kevin. 30 acres.
Yeah, 30 acres. So we didn't partner with them directly, but we partnered with other awesome restaurants in the area, and we did like a whole lunch with a bunch of I guess New York based food Instagrammers, and just kind of like scavenger hunt, just bounced around all these different places, ate a lot of really awesome food, and ended up at Dull Boy for some great cocktails. So I guess just, going back to bringing the brand offline, it's for Taste of Style, we really want to start exploring ways in which we can actually start doing merchandise. So a lot of like our content, you know, is very much combining fashion food, making everything aesthetically pretty, and we want to like potentially start exploring ways in which we can bring that into like actual product. And also, our first event that was really testing out if we can do these like bigger scale events was Be a Boss. I partnered with Local Creative, which is a really awesome Brooklyn-based group of girls that do a lot of stuff, mostly with like local makers in fashion. But we partnered this past summer, last month, for our first panel event. So we had three women in the food world and three women in the retail space, and just kind of talking about the same things we discussed like on our Be a Boss series, just how, you know, entrepreneurship, really, like how to be a woman in their industry, and hoping to do more of those for sure.
Well, I certainly love how proactive you both obviously are when it comes to highlighting and celebrating the achievements of women in the industry, not because you're, you know, beauty and fashion brands, but because there's really a through line of entrepreneurship and just mm-hmm. lifting up women as
exactly
as boss, yeah, as boss women. Yeah. So you spoke a little bit to Boss Babe, certainly if there's anything more you want to add. But Emily, maybe you as well could talk a bit about the Tokeless Society, which, you know, I don't know whether or not our listeners have heard of it, might want to know more about it. You help with event planning and social media. So it's for women within the food industry. You're making connections.
Exactly.
Tell us a little more about Tokeless Society.
Yeah. So I adore Tokeless Society. I think, well, what they are is a nonprofit group supporting women in food and hospitality, and they host a ton of really great, empowering events. But it's not so much that, like, girl power, yay, feel. It's really supporting just other people, and specifically women in general. Like, these different events are so amazing to get to network and talk and just talk to other creative women in the industry. I have made so many friends through that, and it's been really great. So the team is absolutely amazing. And yeah, it's one of my favorite things that I do.
I should probably be, I'm in it, but not a super active member. I'm like giving myself a little yeah, wrist slap, but I do. I love it. It's just an amazing place. I've searched for food writers for, you know, my own website before, but it's just an amazing way for women of all levels and all positions and all niches within the industry to connect.
Exactly.
So it's a great thing. So, guys, who are some of the tastemakers, innovators, trendsetters that you yourself find yourself looking to for inspiration? Who is on the cutting edge of their respective industries?
Do you want to go first, or do you want to go?
We can alternate. So we can.
They're stalling for time.
I've always had a huge girl crush on Athena Calderon. I think she's very lovely, well poised, has amazing, impeccable taste, and that's someone I always look to for inspiration. And another, I mean, these are all like boss babes that I've actually interviewed for Taste of Style, which is funny, but Caroline Ventura, I don't know if you guys are familiar with her. She's the designer and owner of Brutus, which is a really awesome restrained accessories line, and she also just opened a store in the West Village with her husband called Calliope. I may have butchered that because I... Calliope. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, and it's a beautiful kind of like home decor store, like mixed with like some antique pieces from like their travels, and she just does such a beautiful job at curating that store. So I currently have a girl crush on her as well, for sure.
What about you, Emily?
Well, I love Agatha and Erin of Ovenly.
Oh, Ovenly,
they're my favorite. I love that they're so easy to talk to about any type of business thing, but also to be friends with, and they're just so willing, and I know this from Tokeless Society as well, they're so willing to help and support other women in the community. And another Tokeless connection, so Sue Chan is one of the founders of Tokeless, and I feel like anyone who knows Sue does not understand how she does everything she does in one day. So I, whenever I'm like looking at my computer, not really wanting to answer the rest of my emails, I'm like, what is Sue doing right now? Probably working. So. But she has a lot of fun too. So it's like, I feel like she has the perfect balance, and I'm kind of really inspired by women who can have that appropriate balance of work and fun.
So let's really get down to business here. I'm sure this is the moment everybody has been waiting for. We are eager for a breakdown of what is hot and what is not. So what would you say is trending or on the cusp of trending or you know, totally over in the world of food and drink and fashion and beauty and design and everything that you guys know so much about?
I was talking to Cindy before this, and I was like, I know this question is coming, but it's always...
Because it's what plebs like me want to know.
I know. I
want you to break it down in a little BuzzFeed list.
I always expect the question, but for some reason, it's always so hard
to can't answer.
Answer
what my favorite restaurant is, so I totally get it.
Yeah,
I have such a hard time with that question, too. Yes. I'm like, it's just a hard question to answer. You love so many restaurants.
I do think, though, generally speaking, because, I mean, in restaurants, there's a million trends all the time with dishes, so I kind of stay in touch with that a little bit, but it's not really what I'm focused on. I'm focused on like what's going on a larger scale. So for a while I've felt like the 70s are coming back. They're definitely back in fashion for sure. And I really love to see that connection when I'm noticing a pattern in food and then all of a sudden it starts happening in fashion or vice versa and design and everything. So different lunch counters have been becoming really popular in really nicer restaurants. So it's not necessarily like just an old school looking lunch counter. It's really that style of design.
Totally.
The colors, like the mustardy yellows.
I had 70s in my
there you go.
Fashion.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that you see it in food too.
Yeah. I'm waiting for Aspic to come back and all of those like weird 70s style foods.
I've seen Aspic around. Well, certainly in, you know, speaking directly to the 70s in Williamsburg, the restaurant that just opened in the McCarran Hotel, which was the replacement for the Elm, it's called Oleander's, and this is kind of a convergence of fashion and food because it's trying to bring back the 70s Fern Bar. Have you heard of Fern Bar?
Yes.
So that fits, and like they serve grasshoppers and Rob Roy's and like Harvey Wallbangers.
Oh,
70s. I've seen it. I've definitely seen trickles of that. Anything else?
I'm like really loving how activewear is becoming such a fashion forward, I guess, trend right now. There's sites like Bandier that just kind of launched this past year that are doing really awesome things and making girls and, well, I mean, I don't know if they sell men's, but I guess making women excited about working out, at least me, because I, you know, working in food and having so many restaurants to go to on any given night, I'm usually not too motivated to work out. So I feel like with all these different, I guess, brands popping up, like Outdoor Voices is another good example, just really cool brands doing interesting stuff with social and making people excited to work out a little bit harder, I think is really cool.
So you get, you know, you buy from them and then you wear it to brewery yoga?
Right, exactly, exactly.
And that also kind of plays into what's going on with food as well, because... I mean, health food and everything has always been quite popular, but now things are getting a lot more veg heavy.
Yep.
People are being a lot more sustainable and a lot more conscious of that. Even traveling a lot, I'm noticing all of these very healthy places that are opening up in places that you would not ordinarily expect.
Totally. Yeah, like Gardenia, I just had dinner there the other day and I was like, wow, I've never loved a plate of veggies so much in my life. Little Beets, an amazing place in Midtown. Or
sure.
Cafe Clover. West Village, where the chef actually works alongside a nutritionist, but you don't feel like health
right,
is
exactly.
being shoved
it's
down
totally
your throat, although it kind of is.
In the face. It totally is, but it's like I had a plate of pasta there the other day and I was like right after the gym and I was like I didn't feel that bad because I knew it was quinoa and I was like all right I can indulge a little.
I never feel bad about pasta after the gym, especially since I probably haven't gone to the gym in the first place. So guys, before we break, anything new coming up on the horizon for either Taste the Style or Trends on Trends or you personally that you would like to talk about?
Lots of new exciting stuff. So a lot of Breakfast Club stuff. So if I didn't get a chance to explain before, it's a series I started. I've done 7 of them so far. The last one was actually in Glasgow, Scotland, which was the first international one. And it's just getting all of these really cool people who I meet together, different creative people, mostly in food and hospitality. And we have just a killer chef take a break from whatever menu they're doing and do a breakfast that they really love. And it's always family style and just super casual, but very, very friendly to networking and creative conversations. So I'm actually going to be kind of doing a little more US-based stuff and going to Nashville for September, doing a few events in September, and then hopefully LA after that. So a lot of good Breakfast Club stuff coming up.
Exciting. Cindy, what about you?
Yeah, I'm really focused on, you know, just the content right now. And like I mentioned earlier about potentially exploring product and merchandise and more events. So we were in the very early stages of doing an event series called the Soiree or something like that. It's still very early on, where we would basically bring the fashion experience into dining and just bring back excitement about like just getting dressed up for a meal and kind of coordinating your outfit to what you should wear at that given restaurant. So it's still very early stage, so I can't talk about it too much, but it's definitely something that's a big priority for us right now.
And, amazing.
And shameless plug for The Garret, because so that's my fiance's, I mean, I'm a partner, like I said, but it's his project, and we're opening up in the East Village very soon.
All right. We are not adverse to shameless plugs. Plug, plug, plug away. Well, I hope you guys will sit tight, because when we come back from the short break, we are going to chat about what else our favorite trendy restaurants, or maybe not so favorite trendy restaurants. You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network. Know about you guys, but personally, I tend to get automatically turned off by so-called trendy restaurants because, in my estimation, it is exceedingly rare that a place warrants calling up for reservations 8 months in advance or showing up at 4:30 in hopes that you could get some backless bar stool in the corner. And I especially hate the superior attitude and standoffish services that tend to come along with places like that, and the feeling that you are contractually obligated to like a dish just because annoying bloggers like me say that you're contractually obligated to like a dish. So, but even I could admit that there are certain places that actually do live up to the hype. So we are unearthing those rare few gems that you should just suck it up and deal with the crowds, the wait times, the crazy reservations, despite their insufferable trend factor. Guys, what has really wowed you that's oh so trendy?
I'm excited to find out that 30 Acres is trendy because I'm going there in 2 weeks. And so I have no idea.
Hope you could get a seat.
Yeah, no, I'm going with some friends. It's already set. So I'm excited that
you
I am going
to
a trendy place.
Afterwards.
Now that's on the list. So great.
Jacqueline, you're so trendy. Yeah.
But we were talking before the show about Lupolo. And I think that is, especially considering service, the food is delicious. George Mendez's new place. He's delightful. The food is great. But I was mostly impressed with the service that I got when I went. Our waiter knew about wine, could describe it, gave us some tastings to go with what we were ordering, could break down dishes for us. Everybody was friendly. So it is a big cavernous space. It just got 2 stars from the Times. Grub Street had a title of like, this is why it's worth the hype. I think the food is delicious, and more than anything, I was really impressed with the service. My friend and I thought the dude must be Portuguese with the way that he was describing the food, and he was not nearly Portuguese. He was German, Chinese, Austrian something altogether, but he spoke like he knew the food, you know, from his soul, I guess you could say. So I would say Lupolo worth the hype.
Well, you know, after years of avoiding it like the plague, I feel like I could say that Mission Chinese is kind of worth the hype. I never even bothered when it was in its original location on the Lower East Side because it's an outpost of the Chinese restaurant that Danny Bowen had in San Francisco. From the second it moved to New York City, it's been mobbed and impossible to get a seat. But for the very tiny time that he was displaced and he had decided to pop up in Brooklyn at the back of Frankie's Spintino, I was like, man, he's so close to home. I should just finally see what the Kung Pao pastrami is about. But it was, guys, it was legit obnoxious. Like, I totally, like, it was everything that I was afraid it would be in terms of getting the seat, because you had to get somebody on the phone to, you know, pick up and say, hey, yeah, you could have a ticket, but you had to go to the original location on the Lower East Side, and you had to pick up the ticket in person, even though you're eating in Brooklyn, and you had to do it between, like, you know, 1:15 and 1:16 on, like, an alternate Tuesday. But when I got in the door in Brooklyn, the food was so delicious, super cheap. What?
It was that good.
It was so good. I didn't love the Kung Pao pastrami, but I loved everything that I had never heard of. They had like a beet salad that was amazing. They had these cold noodles and this Westlake porridge. And it was like $30, and they killed you with food. I have not gone to his newly reopened place, which is even bigger, buzzier, hypier. Yeah. They serve like entire flats of uni. I don't know. There's like pizza there. I can't speak to the new Mission Chinese, but for the one dinner that I was like, I will go into the Lower East Side and like submit myself to this ridiculous regimented ticket system. The meal I had was kind of worth the hype. Wow. Emily and Sydney, what do you think? Yeah, anything worth it out there?
I think my pick is definitely Luxus in Greenpoint. It's so solid. I think what Daniel Burns is doing is really creative, but it's still so local. And if you just have one bite of the rye bread, I think I got two orders of it. Even with the whole tasting menu, I had to have more. And the fact that it's combined with toast, like what Yep is doing with Evil Twin, is amazing. I was actually in Poland just last month, and one of my friends there loves craft beer. Like, he makes craft beer in his home and just adores it. And Evil Twin came up, and he just like lost it. He like could not. He was so excited. I was like, wait, how is this over there? Like, he was so excited. So I love that, like, the global stamp it's kind of getting, and I guess it could be considered trendy, but I definitely think it's one of those places that's worth trying at least once.
And accessible trendy. I mean, there are few among us will get out to Noma, but
right.
Daniel Burns and Luxus is actually a kind of legit example from what I've heard, not being able to compare it to Luxus. I mean, not being able to compare it to Noma, but he like actually did work at Noma. He didn't just like put it on his resume because he walked in the door once and like, you know, stuck his finger in a sauce. I don't know. But he legitimately worked at Noma and has brought that experience to bear at Luxus.
Right.
So I like your pick.
Same with Frederick Brasilius as well. When he opens his new restaurant, he's so sweet. Like, he's one of the sweetest chefs, and it's always nice to meet a chef who's super talented and then also super down to earth and nice. So I'm really excited to see what he's going to do with his new space.
Cool. Cindy, what do you think is worth the hassle?
So I recently just checked out Seymour's in, I guess, Little Italy, and I was very impressed, actually. I thought the food was, I love the concept. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Michael Chernow, just like kind of meatball shoppy, where, you know, you can pick like your fish with your sides and your sauce. And I thought that was awesome, because I don't always love to pick like a $30 fish that's on the menu and like kind of be disappointed by the sides that it goes with. So I love the fact that I can kind of mix and match, and their poke was unbelievable, and their service was really good, and I think it's just kind of like a home run. Like, you can go during lunch, you can go anytime, they're gonna do really well.
On the best part about Seymour's, as opposed to the meatball shop, there are no insufferable ball jokes.
Oh,
no ball jokes. Maybe taco jokes, like fish taco jokes. Oh god, please. Like, I didn't want to put that in anybody's head. Anyway, that is our show for today. If you want to stay in the loop about what and where you should be eating and or wearing at any given moment, you will want to become a regular reader of Taste the Style at tastethestyle.com and Trends and Trends on at, I'm like mixing my ons and my ats, at trendsontrends.com. And of course, follow them and founder Cindy Ramirez and Emily Elise Miller on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or Pinterest. Today's food writer du jour was Jacqueline Raposo, whose website is wordsfoodart.com. I am followable on Twitter at Sarah Zorn BK, as is Taste Talks at Taste Talks. And you could subscribe to our show feed on iTunes or Stitcher. And also, thank you, listeners. listener, for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes and feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org. So next up, we actually have a teaser clip of Nicole Vitello of Equal Exchange going bananas for bananas on The Farm Report, another great show found right here on Heritage Radio Network. Until next time, you have been listening to Taste Talks.
Bananas are a really weird product. They're a genetic clone, so they are, you can only produce them from the plant basically produces a daughter plant and then a granddaughter plant, and those the plant is constantly reproducing from itself. So that already is kind of strange, particularly when you talk about organic production, because the plant can't evolve to combat anything that's evolving to attack it. Insects are evolving, diseases, you know, fungal and bacterial diseases are evolving, but the banana clone itself is not.
In episode 160 of The Farm Report, host Aaron Fairbanks talks to Nicole Vitello, the banana coordinator at Equal Exchange, about the little-known world of banana distribution.
They're grown in a monocrop area, which tends to just grow bananas, which again, you know, adds to some hardship in trying to produce them. But the technology around them, I mean, both, they basically get harvested in countries. Our bananas come from Ecuador and Peru, which is a lot of organic, and certainly a lot of organic fair trade comes out of those two countries. They get cut and processed. They basically get washed and packed, and the banana boxes are specifically designed. They get on a boat. It takes about 9 to 11 days for them to arrive in the U.S. They're in a refrigerated container. They stay at 58 degrees the entire time. They get to the U.S. They go to produce ripeners. They go into ripening rooms. The temperature is slowly raised. The humidity is raised, as well as ethylene gas is emitted throughout the ripening rooms. The air is forced into the boxes, which have...
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.